Part 37 in the Genesis study. We're going to be in chapter 33 and 34 tonight, so we'll make some ground. And if you remember last week, what was going on, that Jacob was actually on his way back to the land of Canaan, and he had sent scouts out ahead, and the scouts had said that Esau was on his way with 400 men, and he had sent the animals, separated the animals and sent them in droves, not all at once, but in droves separated according to their kind, the females and males together, and as gifts to Esau. So one right after another, and then of course Jacob spent the night wrestling with, as it turned out to be, the Lord. And so that, of course, is where we ended our study last week, and that in a place called Penuel, and that with the sun rising upon him. So. And so with that, then we start Genesis chapter 33, and in verse 1, Jacob lifted up his eyes and looked, and behold, Esau came. So, of course, we knew that the man that Jacob spent all night wrestling with was not Esau, although Jacob probably thought at first that it was. So as the sun's coming up, and the man, which of course turned out to be the Lord that Jacob spent time wrestling with all night long, he is gone, but here comes Esau, and with him 400 men. So of course Jacob feared that Esau was still mad, and that he was bringing the 400 men as an army. And of course the animals were sent in the droves as gifts to Esau, in order to quell any anger that Esau still had against Jacob, because of course Jacob had tricked Esau out of his birthright, had stolen the birthright away from him, and also through trickery had gotten Isaac to give to Jacob the covenant blessing, pass on the blessings of the covenant to Jacob. And of course, if you remember, that really made didn't make Esau's day at all, and he was extremely, extremely angry. And that was why Rebekah, Isaac's wife, sent Jacob away. And really got Isaac to send Jacob to Uncle Laban's house, and where Jacob now had spent 20 years. Well, so at any rate, here comes Esau with his 400 men, and Jacob divided the children unto Leah and unto Rachel and unto the two handmaids. So they divided up into four groups, and he put the handmaids and their children in the front, foremost, and Leah and her children after the two handmaids, and Rachel and Joseph hindermost, so in the last group. So if you can picture that. And really, if you think about it, that's a picture of who he cared for the most and the least. Rachel, he loved the most, and so she's the very last. She's being protected the most, and then Leah, and then up front of the handmaids. And of course, the handmaids are the ones that he cares the least about. So that's the pecking order of the wives. And he passed over before them. So in other words, Jacob does the right thing. He goes in front of all of them and bowed himself to the ground seven times until he came near to his brother. So I'll tell you what, I've got a picture in my mind of this event. You know, as he's walking, and I pictured Jacob to be kind of a small man anyway, and sort of having, you know, a tunic or something on him. And as he's walking, then he's just bowing, you know, and he takes a few more steps toward you, and he bows again all the way to the ground, and a few more steps, he bows all the way to, you know, it's just almost comical in my mind, the way it looks. But that's exactly what happened. So he bowed 7 times on his way. And so Esau sees Jacob and he runs toward him. And of course, Jacob has no idea what the results, you know, are going to be. Whether, you know, and you can bet that Esau is probably armed. You know, he probably has a sword and, you know, knives and all kinds of things. And so you can imagine the look on Jacob's face that here comes Esau running toward him, you know, and he's well armed and all that. But what does Esau do? Esau runs to meet him and embraces him and falls on his neck and kissed him, and they wept. So, you know, I'm certain that was a great relief to Jacob. You know, he didn't know whether to run or to stand still, or, you know, probably scared half out of his wits as to what was going to happen. But Esau embraces him. And so then Esau sees the women and the children. And says to Jacob, he lifted up his eyes and saw the women and the children and said, "Who are these with thee?" And Jacob, you know, because obviously he'd never seen any of the women or any of the children. And, you know, so introduce me, in other words, to, you know, your wives and the children, because he's their uncle, you know, to these children, and he's the brother-in-law to the wives. And he said, "The children which God hath graciously given thy servant." Then the handmaids came near and their children, and they bowed themselves. And Leah also with her children came near and bowed themselves. And after came Joseph near, and Rachel, and they bowed themselves, you know. So everybody, you know, bowed themselves down to, you know, Uncle Esau, or, you know, brother-in-laws, as it happened to be. And so then, you know, this just all seems very familiar in a way to me. As someone who hasn't seen their brother in years, really, the conversation goes really just as one would expect. If you have a brother and haven't seen him for a while, and then are, you know, greeted by your brother, and you know, things have gone on since you've seen that person, you know, over the course of the years. And, you know, well, wow, who are these? You know, and well, this is my wife, and this is my children, and, you know, well, come meet your, you know, your uncle, come meet your brother-in-law, you know. And they all go, "How are you doing?" And they bow themselves, you know. And then the next question out of Esau's, you know, mouth is, you know, "Well, what did you mean by all these animals, by the droves of animals that were showing up?" And so he says, verse 8, he says, "What meanest thou by all the drove which I met?" And he says, so Jacob answers, that "These are to find grace in the sight of my Lord." In other words, I'm giving them to you so that you won't kill me, basically. But, you know, to find grace in your sight. And Esau says, "Oh, I have enough." You know, so everybody's obviously trying to be gracious toward one another. I mean, the one thing that does not come up in this conversation really is the 400-pound gorilla in the room, which is the obvious thing. Jacob had deceived Esau out of his birthright, and right before he you know, was shipped out of his father's house, he had deceived Isaac and received the covenant blessings that were rightfully Esau's. I mean, that's the elephant in the room, and no one's saying anything about any of that. So, you know, they're trying to be gracious one toward another, without addressing the obvious thing between them, you know, the source of any discord. So Esau says, "I have enough, my brother. Keep that which thou hast unto yourself." You know, I've got plenty of herds and plenty of servants, and you know, I've prospered and all that. So, you know, I don't need your stuff, you know, your animals or anything. Just you keep them. And of course, isn't that going to be the response of anybody, really? If you were Esau and you had 400 men behind you, I mean, they're obviously Esau's servants or somehow accompanied with Esau. Esau is obviously a man of some wealth and power in order to be able to muster 400 men to come with him. You know, it's almost insulting in a way to take those, isn't it? I mean, it's almost demeaning in a way if you just say, oh, well, thanks, I needed those. Because what you're saying is, you know, wow, I really don't have anything, and I'm sure glad you brought, you know, you're giving those to me, because I haven't prospered at all in 20 years. You know, I'm living hand to mouth, and this is the greatest thing that's ever happened to me. Esau, on the other hand, he says, I have plenty, I don't need any of your herds or anything else from you. Well, Jacob, though, says, nay, I pray thee, if now I have found grace in thy sight, then, in other words, if you're happy that I'm here, then receive my present at my hand. Take what I'm giving you. For therefore I have seen thy face as though I had seen the face of God, and thou wast pleased with me. Wow, that's a pretty tall cotton saying. You know, in other words, you know, you're happy seeing me. I am extraordinarily happy seeing you. You know, even seeing God couldn't have made me happier than I am in seeing you. That's what Jacob's saying. Seeing you is just like seeing the face of God. So take, verse 11, I pray thee, my blessing that is brought to thee, because God hath dealt graciously with me, and because I have enough. And he urged him, and he took it. So it's one of those things where I'm sure everybody's been in this situation before. You're trying to give a gift to someone, and they're trying to refuse it, and you're trying to insist that they take it, and they're trying to, oh, no, I can never take that. Oh, I insist that you take it. No, I can never do that. Yes, please. You know, and it's that back and forth until finally, okay, well, if you know, are you sure? And, oh, yeah, I'm absolutely positive. You know, and that's exactly how it went. So Esau, you know, is even though he probably had no objections to taking the animals, the gifts, truly, he didn't want to appear as though he wanted to take them or that he needed them or anything else. And Jacob, although he probably didn't want to give them, he gave them to assuage the anger of Esau and to appear as though he was the brother that there was no reason to be angry at. Yeah, Mike.
I was just thinking about Ephesians 4:32, and be kind, tenderhearted, forgiving one another, even, which means equal, as God has forgiven you.
Mm-hmm. That's right. And it, on the surface. Yeah, Mike, for those of you on the internet, Mike just quoted Ephesians 4:32, which, you know, you're forgiving as God hath forgiven you. Which, on the surface, it would appear that Jacob is practicing forgiveness for the sake of, as God hath forgiven us. The forgiveness seems to be there. You know, I forgive anything that you've done, and Esau seems to be forgiving Jacob, and, you know, that seems to be what's going on here. But the fact of the matter is, whatever is going on here is really only, it's only skin deep. It's not really from the heart. And we'll see that here very, very shortly. Because Esau, as it turns out, offers to accompany Jacob. Now Jacob is supposed to go to the promised land and ostensibly going back to see his daddy, you know, back to the family. And where does daddy live? Well, he lives in Beersheba. We saw that in chapter 26, verse 33. He's back there in Beersheba. Well, at any rate, so he is going to go south from Padan Aram, where Laban lives. I'm finally getting to the point where I can pronounce Padan Aram. But meanwhile, so he is, going to travel, and Esau offers to travel with him and his 400 men. Well, so in verse 12, Esau says, "Let us take our journey, and let us go, and I will go before thee." Well, now, what would your response be to that? My brother has met with me, and we've exchanged all the niceties, and, you know, my brother Esau has accepted the gifts that I sent to him, and you know, with all graciousness and all the you know, the nice talk back and forth and all that, and Esau knows that I'm on my way to see daddy and all that, and Esau says, "Well, we'll go with you. We'll lead the way." Well, shouldn't be a problem, should it? But Jacob says, I don't think that we really should do that. I don't think that we really should do that. And so in verse 13, Jacob says unto him, "My Lord knoweth that the children are tender." In other words, the children need special attention. They're young, they can't keep up, and they have to stop often. You know, you have to get off the highway at the exit and go into the bathroom all the time. You know, you can't make any time when you got little kids in the car. And the flocks and the herds with young are with me. And so, you know, we got to stop all the time because the young and the herds have to nurse and all that, and you can't make any time with them either. And if the men should overdrive them one day, all the flock will die. And the fact of the matter is, Esau, you know, I know that you and the 400 men are going to want to zip right along, and we're going to, we're going to have great difficulty keeping up with you, and it's going to cause us a mountain of problems. And so Jacob suggests that he'll lead them slowly, you know, until the time when then he'll come to see them, Esau in Seir. And so he says, "Let my Lord, I pray thee, pass over before his servant, and I will lead on softly." You know, slowly, and you know, when the kids need to go to the bathroom, we'll stop off the exit here off the, you know, off the highway, and you know, go to McDonald's and let them play for a little while and all that. And according to the cattle that goeth before me, and the children be able to endure until I come to see my Lord unto Seir. So, you know, he says, "Well, you go on back to your home in Seir," which I have this map here. I made a little map there. You got a little map. Jacob was up here, and he's coming down here. Now, this is where Laban caught up to him. Here in I'll hold this in front of the computer screen so you can all see it. But here's Ramoth, and that's the map where Laban caught up to him, and so angry, he comes down here, and here's Penuel, where he wrestled around with the angel. And so the 400 with Esau came from down here, and they came up this way. Okay? So right around Penny over here is where they met. All right. So Jacob says, well, and now here's where Jacob wants to go, right down here, Beersheba. Okay. So Seir is down here somewhere. And so Jacob says, well, will you go back to Seir? And I will, I'll lead the girl, you know, the little kids and the cattle with their young and everything onto Beersheba, and then I'll come over and visit you and see her. So that was the suggestion. Well, Esau says, well, why don't I just leave a few men with you to help out? And Esau said, verse 15, he says, well, let me now leave with these some of the folk that are with me. And he says, what need is it? So what need is there of doing that? Let me find grace in the sight of my Lord. In other words, get out of my business. Let me find grace in the sight of my Lord. And so Esau returned that day on his way unto Seir. So what do you think was really going on there?
Esau wanted a couple of guys to keep an eye on Jacob.
Esau wanted to keep an eye on Jacob, exactly. And Jacob didn't trust Esau. Exactly right. So, Jacob wanted to get rid of Esau, and Esau wanted to keep an eye on Jacob. So as it turns out then, Esau does leave and with all his men, and Jacob ostensibly is going to go ahead and go toward Beersheba. But in fact, for all the incredible spirituality that Jacob learned with his wrestling with the angel and all that, he now, as so often happens to people in their Christian lives, he now takes a spiritual step in the wrong direction. Jacob makes a side trip. Now, there's a place on here called Succoth, I guess, however you want to pronounce it. The Peniel is right here, and Succoth is over here, really in the wrong direction from Beersheba. And he goes over and does more than just pick up provisions. So Beersheba's down here, and he's here. He goes over here and really travels in a geographically wrong direction. So let's read and see what happened. In verse 17, and Jacob journeyed to Succoth and built him a house. So first he makes a house, and then he made booths for his cattle. It'd be sort of like building a barn. Therefore, the name of the place is called Succoth. Now, Moses, when he writes the book of Genesis, doesn't give explanation for why Jacob leaves this place. Because he had built a house, he built a barn, he's very near the river, so the grass is fertile there. That wasn't the problem. Might have been a disagreement or some kind of problem that went on with the locals, whatever, but something made him move and leave there and go to the city, or towards the city, which is Shalem, which is a city of Shechem, which is right over here, and that's, again, not toward his goal of Beersheba. So he moves farther away from Beersheba. And so you read in verse 18, and Jacob came to Shalem, a city of Shechem, which is in the land of Canaan, when he came from Padan Aram, and pitched his tent before the city. Now, if you remember when we read about Lot, Lot pitched his tent before the city also, and of course that city that he pitched his tent before was Sodom. And it wasn't long before he was incorporated, his tent got incorporated into the city of Sodom. So that's one of the things that Jacob is pitching his tent right there before the city. And you know, the closer you get to the city, sooner or later you're in the city. And God, you just need to remember that God never really intended us to live in cities, especially way back when. And whenever people start moving into the cities, it just becomes an ungodly mess. And that's exactly what happens with Jacob in this instance. So he pitches his tent before the city, and he buys land. Again, you can figure that this is not a temporary situation that Jacob is planning. The first place he moved, he built a house. This is not something you do when you're just staying somewhere temporarily. You don't build a house in a barn. Well, here he, verse 19, he bought a parcel of land where he had spread his tent at the hand of the children of Hamor, Shechem's father. So Shechem was a man. Shechem was a man whose father was Hamor. And Shechem was the prince of the land, as it turns out. So Shechem's father, for 100 pieces of money. So first he builds, pitches his tent, then he buys a parcel of land. And the last thing he does, unlike his father Isaac and his grandfather Abraham, when they came to a place that they were going to settle down, the first thing that they did was they built an altar and called upon the name of the Lord. The order of events with Jacob is completely different. With Jacob, first he pitches his tent, and then he buys land, and the last thing he does is builds an altar. Verse 20, he erected there an altar and called it Elohi Israel. So the spiritual aspect of Jacob, once again, is just backwards. Rather than making the altar and the calling upon the name of the Lord first, he makes his move without the help of God, without the guidance of God, without prayer to God. He makes his moves by the flesh and by his own desire, and then he'll build an altar where he wants to build an altar. So it's just the opposite of operating as his father and grandfather did. So you see the difference there, I hope. Meanwhile, so he has purchased land, he has built his, erected his tent, he has an altar there, right before the city of Shalem, and more problems. He starts walking down the path the wrong direction. You remember the birth of Dinah, who was born to Leah, and if you turn your Bibles back to chapter 30, along about verse 21. In verse 20, Leah said, God hath endued me with a good dowry, now will my husband dwell with me, because I have borne him 6 sons, and she called his name Zebulun. And afterwards she bare a daughter and called her name Dinah. And God remembered Rachel, and God opened hearkened to her and opened her womb, and she conceived and bare a son, and that, of course, was Joseph. And then if you look at verse 25, it came to pass when Rachel had borne Joseph that Jacob said unto Laban, send me away. And then, of course, there was the 6 years that Jacob spent in his animal husbandry project after that. So we can figure, we can estimate that Dinah was probably about 7 to 8 years old when Jacob and his wives and children snuck out and left Padan Aram when they left Laban. But now, of course, in between there, Jacob settled down and built a house and a barn, and then moved from there to where he is now and has bought land. Well, Dinah, don't you know, is old enough to go into town and find her friends in town and wander around the city with her friends. You go to the mall and go shopping with her daddy's credit card and all that. So it's hard to pin her age down exactly, but she's probably somewhere between 12 and 16 years old. And I know that's going to be a shock to you, but as soon as a young lady matured physically to the point where she was of childbearing age, at that time she could be married. She didn't have to be 18. So that's just the fact of how things were back then.
Came later.
Yeah, that's right. So if a girl was 13 years old and she was able to bear children, she could be married. It's just the way it was. That 18-year-old thing is a newer concept of the law. But meanwhile, so you see in Genesis 34, verse 1, Dinah, and the daughter of Leah, which she bare unto Jacob, went out to see the daughters of the land. Of course, that the daughters of the land would be the girls that were living in the city, which Shalem, the city, a city of Shechem. So, and Shechem is, if you remember right, is the man who sold Jacob the land. Now, this is something that developed over time. Shechem, girls of the street. No, not girls of the street. Probably just girls that lived in the city. Shechem, when he sold the land to Jacob, probably saw Dinah at that time. Dinah would have gone into the city and gone to the markets and things with the other girls. Shechem could have noticed her at that time numerous times. So this is probably a situation that developed over time. It probably was not a sudden thing. But there came a time when this event happened, when Shechem attacks Dinah sexually. Now, Dinah probably knew Shechem, and as most sexual predators or most sexual events happen by people that are familiar with one another, and so that's just the way it is. But meanwhile, verse 2, and when Shechem the son of Hamor the Hivite, prince of the country, saw her, he took her and lay with her and defiled her. So, in other words, they weren't married, but they engaged in marital relations. And his soul clave unto Dinah, the daughter of Jacob, and he loved the damsel, and spake kindly unto the damsel. And Shechem spake unto his father Hamor, saying, get me this damsel to wife. In other words, I want to marry her. I'm madly in love with this young lady. I want to marry her. Well, turns out Jacob hears the news, because all the boys were out doing their thing in the field. Jacob is in the tent, and he gets the news. I guess on the Drudge Report, I have no idea. But he doesn't do anything. He decides he's not going to do anything until his sons get home. So he holds his peace, and more than that, he goes out to dinner with Hamor and Shechem. Shechem, the man who defiled Dinah, and Hamor would be Shechem's father. So in verse 5 and 6, Jacob heard that he had defiled Dinah, his daughter. Now his sons were with his cattle in the field, and Jacob held his peace until they were come. And Hamor, the father of Shechem, went out unto Jacob to commune with him. So what that was all about was, you know, we need to come to an arrangement and an agreement here, because my son wants to marry your daughter. Well, news travels fast, especially when you have the internet, and there's not a lot of things to do when you're out there watching cattle. So the boys got out their smartphones and they saw the news on their smartphone. Dinah had been defiled. And the sons of Jacob came out of the field when they heard. And the men were grieved, and they were very wroth. Wroth meaning angry. Because he had wrought folly in Israel in lying with Jacob's daughter, which thing ought not to be done. So, there's a deal that's proposed, and that is to intermarry between the Hivites, which are Canaanites, and the Israelites, which are, of course, the sons and daughters of Jacob. And that would just be beneficial for all. It would open up trade opportunities and opportunities to expand the merchandise, and everyone would prosper, and everyone would be happy, and they would all just be like one big happy family, and what could be wrong with that? It would just be good for everybody, would it not? Sort of like the free trade agreement that was made years ago. I mean, you know, we can trade with Mexico, and we can, you know, we can intermarry with their people, and they can intermarry with our people, and we can trade with them, and they can trade with us, and everything will be happy and wonderful. And, you know, this is just a small example of that. Well, and Hamor communed with them, saying, the soul of my son Shechem longeth for your daughter. I pray you give her him to wife, and make ye marriages with us, and give your daughters unto us, and take our daughters unto you. And ye shall dwell with us, and the land shall be before you. Dwell and trade ye therein, and get you possessions therein. Just think of all the things that will be yours, because you marry our daughters, and we marry your daughters. And then Shechem, of course, he's the one who wants to marry Dinah. He throws in his 2 cents worth, because he's absolutely willing to do anything to have that young lady as his wife. And Shechem said unto her father and unto her brethren, of course that being Jacob and her brothers, let me find grace in your eyes, and what ye shall say unto me, I will give. And in his name, whatever it is, I'll do anything for that girl. Ask me never so much dowry and gift, and I will give according as ye shall say unto me, but give me the damsel to wife. You boy, I'll tell you what, name your price, it doesn't make any difference. I will do whatever you say. That's exactly what that means. So, verse 13 says, the sons of Jacob, and there's a reason they're called the sons of Jacob in that verse, not the brothers of Dinah. Can you just take a guess why they're called the sons of Jacob and not the brothers of Dinah in that verse? Because they're about to do something deceptive. They're taking after Dad, and that's exactly right, because they're about to do something that's very deceptive. They didn't like the fact that Dinah has been defiled, and they find it not only insulting, but they're going to get back at the people who did that. Disgusting thing, because they find it a personal insult to them and their entire people, to the name of Israel. And so they're going to name terms. And Jacob, meanwhile, you'll notice that you're not hearing from Jacob at all during any of this. Jacob is just sitting quietly and not saying a thing. His silence is just overwhelming during this whole thing. You'll hear from him sooner. You'll hear from him at some point. But right now, during these negotiations, his silence is absolutely deafening. You'd expect him to jump in and lay down the law, but at the moment, you're not going to hear a thing. But here's the sons of Jacob. And the sons of Jacob answered Shechem and Hamor his father deceitfully. In other words, they had formulated a plan. And exactly what that plan was, and they were going to carry out that plan, and said, because he hath defiled Dinah, their sister. So because she had been defiled, that is exactly why they were going to use deceit and carry out the plan that they were going to use. So here it was, and they said unto them, to Shechem and Hamor his father, we cannot do this thing, to give our sister to one that is uncircumcised, for that were a reproach unto us. But in this we will consent unto you, if ye will be as we be, that every male of you be circumcised. Then will we give our daughters unto you, and we will take your daughters to us. But we will, and we will dwell with you, and we will become one people. But if you will not hearken unto us to be circumcised, then will we take our daughter, and we will be gone. So in other words, every Hivite male has to be circumcised, or else the deal's off. But if every Hivite male gets circumcised, then all's well. We'll take your daughters unto us. You can have, we'll all be one, and everybody live happily ever after. So, now, as you can imagine, that would take a little bit of convincing for most of the men, because they're all grown up males, and sounds to me like sort of a painful type of operation, especially since they probably didn't have a lot of anesthetic laying around and things like that. So Hamor and Shechem do a lot of convincing to the rest of the Hivite males. And the way they do that is they're telling them the benefits of going through with this. You know, there's commercial benefits. There's benefits of wealth. There's the benefits of marriage with the women, and you know, all kinds of benefits. It's going to be tremendous if we just do this one thing. So their words, verse 18, pleased Hamor and Shechem, Hamor's son. And the young man deferred not to do the thing, because he had delight in Jacob's daughter. In other words, he was ready to be circumcised right there. And he was more honorable than all the house of his father. And Hamor and Shechem, his son, came unto the gate of their city, and communed with the men of their city, saying, These men are peaceable with us. Therefore, let them dwell in the land and trade therein, for the land, behold, is large enough for them. Let us take their daughters for us for wives, and let us give them for our daughters. Only herein will the men consent unto us, for to dwell with us, to be one people, if every male among us be circumcised as they are circumcised. Shall not their cattle and their substance and every beast of theirs be ours? Only let us consent unto them, and they will dwell with us. And unto Hamor and unto Shechem his son hearkened all that went out of the gate of the city, and every male was circumcised, all that went out of the gate of his city. So the greed got it worked. They all thought, wow, women and wealth, who could beat that? Women and wealth, we'll have all we want, who can beat that? All we got to do is get a little snip, snip, cut, cut, and we'll have all the women and wealth that we want. Well, remember what Hamor and Shechem said. These men are peaceable with us.
Nothing to worry about.
Nothing to worry about at all. Nothing to worry about. And they didn't. They didn't worry at all. Never suspected a thing. And it came to pass on the third day, when they were sore. I can't remember when I was circumcised because I was a little tiny baby. But I guess the third day must be when the pain really kicks in. Must be when the pain really kicks in. But it came to pass on the third day when they were sore that two of the sons of Jacob, Simeon and Levi, Dinah's brethren, see now it's Dinah's brethren, it's not Jacob's sons anymore, Dinah's brethren, because they're doing this to avenge what happened to Dinah, took each man his sword and came upon the city boldly and slew all the males. And they slew Hamor and Shechem his son with the edge of the sword, and took Dinah out of Shechem's house and went out. The sons of Jacob, now remember, now it's the sons of Jacob. The sons of Jacob came upon the slain and spoiled the city because they had defiled their sister. Well, as it turns out, they take all the possessions, they take all the women, and all the children of the Canaanites. That was part of the deal, wasn't it? That all the possessions, they would be able to take, trade possessions and everything, and they'd be able to take for themselves the women. Wasn't that part of the deal? It was.
Well, Shechem missed that part, but full understanding.
He just didn't have a full understanding, did he?
Right.
Yeah, we'll give our daughters unto you, and you'll take your daughters unto us. Yeah, that, I'm sure that was part of the deal. And they're going to exercise that part of the deal. They're going to take the women, absolutely, and they do too. So they, verse 28, they took their sheep and their oxen and their asses and that which was in the city and that which was in the field and all their wealth and all their little ones and their wives took they captive and spoiled even all that was in the house. So they took everything. Cleaned the place out. And Jacob finally breaks his silence. Finally has something to say. But when he does have something to say, it's really almost hypocritical, frankly. And what he does have to say, he's rebuking the sons, but it's almost as if he cares only about himself. frankly. He's concerned only about his own safety. And Jacob said to Simeon and Levi, "Ye have troubled me to make me to stink among the inhabitants of the land, among the Canaanites and the Perizzites, and I, being few in number, they shall gather themselves together against me and slay me, and I shall be destroyed, I and my house." Who does he worry about? Himself.
Jacob.
Yeah, Jacob's worried about Jacob. The boy's retort to that is the moral issue. I mean, why did they do this? Because Dinah was defiled. They said, should he deal with our sister as with a harlot? The Canaanites had violated their sister. And Jacob was acting as if it was nothing. Well, last week we saw Jacob wrestle with the angel. And it would have seemed that Jacob came to a great revelation in his life that he needed to cling to God and Him alone and not trust any of his own works for his own salvation, that he couldn't trust it in anything that he himself did, but he had to trust in the workings of God. Having said that and come to that revelation, even as Christians today also come to that same revelation that they have to trust Christ and His finished work for their soul's salvation, leaving behind anything that they have done as nothing but filthy rags. Oftentimes, Christians continue to make poor choices and oftentimes walk backwards rather than walking forwards in their life of grace. Jacob has always lacked moral backbone. And that's one of the hardest things to grow. If you're not born with a backbone, it's hard to grow one. And Jacob, unfortunately, his backbone is very weak. To do that which is right is very difficult for Jacob. Jacob had trouble facing his brother Esau after he knew he had deceived him. And he feared facing him because he knew what he had done to him. And even after Esau came and hugged him and threw his arms around his neck and kissed him, it would seem that Jacob couldn't trust Esau, or maybe it was the shame. It's hard to say. But for whatever reason, Jacob didn't want to be in Esau's presence. Didn't want to be in his presence. I would seem to think that it was the shame. He knew that he had wronged his brother. And even though his brother seemed to have forgiven him, oftentimes it's harder to forgive ourselves for the things that we've done. And it's easier a lot of times to avoid the situation than it is to confront it and say, "I'm sorry." And not only get forgiveness from those that we've hurt, but also to be able to forgive ourselves for the things that we've done. The reason I think that is the situation with Jacob was because rather than moving on with his journey toward his father's house, he stops and builds a house, builds a barn, gets moved out of the, gets probably forced out of there for some whatever circumstance, and then arrives there at the city of Shechem and buys land. And up until the time of this incident with Dinah, we know for a fact that it's been anywhere between 6 and 8 years that he's been spending since the time that he left his uncle Laban in Padan Aram. So he's been avoiding going to see his father Isaac, because once again he deceived Isaac, and he has a guilty conscience and knows that he wronged him. So he just feels, he feels guilty and is trying to avoid the confronting the situation. With the situation with his daughter Dinah, you never once saw Jacob show outrage or anger when his own daughter was violated sexually, which is an unusual reaction. Then Shechem's father visits with Jacob and proposes a deal. The opportunity to trade with the Canaanites and to intermarry with women between the Israelites and the Canaanites. Jacob knew that that would violate the instructions given by God to both Abraham and Isaac, and to Jacob. In Genesis 28:1-4, we read, Isaac called Jacob and blessed him and charged him and said unto him, Thou shalt not take a wife of the daughters of Canaan. Arise, go to Padan Aram, to the house of Bethuel, my father's mother's father, and take thee a wife from thence of the daughters of Laban, thy mother's brother. The God Almighty bless thee and make thee fruitful and multiply thee, that thou mayest be a multitude of people, and give thee the blessing of Abraham to thee and to thy seed with thee, that thou mayest inherit the land wherein thou art a stranger, which God gave unto Abraham. So he knew that one of the conditions of the covenant of God was that they were not to intermarry with the people of with the native people of Canaan. And yet Jacob, as he sat there, he had made the deal with the boy's father. He had made the deal already that they could intermarry. And then when the boys got back, when his boys got back, and they all sat down together, and Shechem said, I'll do anything to be able to marry Dinah. And Jacob's boys said, well, you need to, all your men need to be circumcised, and then if you do that one thing, then we can intermarry and we'll all be as one family. Jacob didn't say anything because that was his intention. That was exactly his intention, because he looked at that situation and thought, it'll be profitable for us, knowing full well that that was against the will of God and against the covenant blessing that he had received from his father. He was putting his blessing by staying silent on the thing, his sons were, he thought that they were doing. It was only till it wasn't discovered by Jacob until after the slaughter that they weren't serious about the agreement. You see, as long as Jacob thought that in fact his sons were on board with going ahead and intermarrying with the Canaanites, that's exactly what Jacob wanted to do, to keep peace, even if it meant breaking the will of God and breaking the covenant agreement. Paul talks about people who will do anything, even if it's sinning, they'll justify any sin, and they're happiest when other people get on board with them. And that's exactly what Jacob was doing. He knew that what he was doing was sinful, but because his sons were on board with the sin, he was able to justify it in his own mind. Paul says in Romans 1:31 and 32 that people are without understanding, covenant breakers. And that's exactly what Jacob was doing. He was breaking the covenant with God, who, knowing the judgment of God, that they which commit such things are worthy of death, not only do the same, but have pleasure in them that do it. So Jacob had pleasure that his boys were also on board with the same sin, the same covenant breaking. Even worse. Maybe even worse. In verse 30, when Jacob finds out that all the men of the town have been killed, Jacob says to Simeon, "Levi, you've troubled me to make me to stink among the inhabitants of the land, among the Canaanites and the Perizzites. And I, being few in number, they shall gather themselves together against me and slay me, and I shall be destroyed, I and my house." You see the small amount of faith that Jacob has. What is it that God said to Jacob before he even left Laban's house? He said, get you to the land of Canaan and I will be with you. And here's Jacob saying, now everyone's going to kill me. Forgetting everything that God had ever said to him. Such small faith in such a small man. But a small man that God no doubt loved, as Paul says. Jacob have I loved. The one of small faith so often. No doubt about that.